Saturday night, then that means from high above, beautiful Lake Osceola in downtown Jefferson Valley, New York, the John Mack Radio Show is on the air. Good evening. This is John McMullen of John Mack to Some. Welcome you to the 152nd episode of the weekly John Mack Radio Show. The recordings for the previous 151 shows may be found at www.johnmack13.com under the radio show tab. And John Mack is J-O-H-N-M-A-C. That's www.johnmack13.com. My most recent piece for the Westchester Guardian is at website www.westchesterguardian.com. It concludes the 206 column, the Credit Disruption Series. Westchester Guardian is WestchesterGuardian. I hope you'll read the columns and if the spirit ever moves you, comment to me at johnmack13@gmail.com. You'll find links at the website I mentioned before, www.johnmack13.com, to previous radio shows and to my online daily newspaper. The newspaper is a curation of news articles from around the country and the world. It's free and it's only the one email per day. I hope you'll join us every week at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Sunday evenings live, or as most do, to listen later. Our next week's guest is author and ex-Village Voice columnist Julian DeBell. And now to this show, the 152nd in the series, as I mentioned. Callers may call in at any time during the show by dialing 646-716-9756. That's 646-716-9756. I usually hold callers until near the end of my interview with my guest. My guest tonight is Daniel Beck, a druggist and owner of the Jefferson Valley Pharmacy, my local drugstore, as well as another show in the immediate area. Dan is also an entrepreneur who has just recently had a major expansion and relocation of my local store. We'll get to these happenings on tonight's John Mack Radio Show. So let's get started. Good evening. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be here, and thanks for having me.
To start at the beginning, where'd you grow up and then go to early school, Dan?
I grew up in South Salem, New York, which isn't far from Jefferson Valley, and I went through the Catona-Lewisboro school system.
Did you have an early interest in science, technology, or medicine?
I had an interest in science. Science and math were my strong points growing up in school, and upon graduation, I started as a chemistry major.
Okay, and you started off as in broadly in science. Where'd you go to after high school?
I started out as a chemistry major at Marist College, and I enjoyed it, but I didn't see me being able to work with the public. I just viewed it as being stuck in a laboratory my whole life, which I'm a people person, so that wasn't going to work out. So after 2 years as a chemistry major, I transferred to the Massachusetts College of Pharmacy to pursue pharmacy. So we would still have a strong chemistry base, but I would hopefully get to work out with the public.
There was a very nice chemistry professor at Marist, Richard Patriere, who passed away recently. Did you ever come into contact with him?
He was actually my general chemistry teacher as well as my advisor.
Okay, he was extremely well thought of in the community and by the faculty, anyhow.
Yeah, Dr. La Pietra was quite a guy.
How long is the college pharmacy degree program? Did you have to do any courses over, or did they accept everything that Marist had and everything?
I may have lost a few courses. I had to take some extra courses over the summer, biology, to make myself in line so I wouldn't lose a year upon the transfer.
Are internships part of the program in a pharmacy program?
There are, in the pharmacy program, there are externships. So I did 5 weeks at a retail location, 5 weeks in a hospital pharmacy rotation, and then I did 7 weeks at a hospital as part of a pharmacist and doctor round, where they went and did rounds with all the patients every morning, and you had to follow a group of patients. Then in addition, New York State requires you to do internships in order to get your license.
So because you're in the Massachusetts school, did your internships there count, or did you then have to do anything in New York State after graduation?
Well, in between your third and fourth years, you have to amass 1,500 hours working in a pharmacy under a preceptor as you log these hours, and you need to be able, you need to have 1,500 hours in order to take the boards, the pharmacy boards in New York State.
Then where did you do those?
In New York, I did them at the Armonk Pharmacy, way back when the Armonk Pharmacy used to exist on the corner in Armonk, and I did all of them there.
I know that for law and for accounting, the New York State requirements are considered, well, they in California, the most difficult in the country. Is it the same in for the pharmacy boards?
California is tough in that they have their own exam and it's only good in California. But New York State has what's known as a wet lab, where you actually have to go into a lab and do some pharmacy compounds, and they watch over you while you do them. And that's, I think, the only state that does that.
Then what happened after graduation?
After graduation, I continued waiting to hear from the boards if I passed. And once I passed, I started a full-time position at the Armonk Pharmacy where I interned.
A close friend of mine, a doctor, has two children who were graduates of the Philadelphia College of Pharmacy. When they graduated, they both began at CVS at what seemed like ungodly high salaries. My friend explained that at that time, CVS was expanding so rapidly in the South Jersey and the Philadelphia area that there was a great demand for pharmacists, and they were just buying diplomas and certifications. Or was it the same in this area? Was it a great expansion and fairly high salaries?
I would say in the 90s, that was definitely the case, where they would give you sign-on bonuses to sign on for a certain amount of time just because there were too many pharmacy positions open and not enough pharmacists to fill them. But since that time, it's now the opposite. Now there are too many pharmacists and not enough positions.
Did you continue in Armonk for a while, or did you move around a bit?
I was in Armonk for about 2 years, and then after that, I jumped around at several independent pharmacies, trying to find the right fit for myself and for the owner.
And you mentioned you also did some CVS work for a while. Is that the case?
I worked for CVS, and I lasted about 5 months. That was about it.
How long were you working for others before you decided to open your own business?
I was a pharmacist for about 8 years before I started on my own. I went from job to job, taking a little bit from each job that I liked and made observations of what I liked, what I didn't like. And then the opportunity came about when the local pharmacy sold out to CVS and it left a void in the community.
Had you been planning that for a long time, looking around, or was it just that there was an opportunity there and you took advantage of it?
I had always wanted to own a pharmacy. I'd worked for several guys who promised me ownership, promised they would sell me the store, and all of that never came to fruition. So I knew I wanted to open one at some point, and this was just the stars had aligned, and it was the right area at the right time, and so I took the jump.
As you mentioned, about the same time you were starting, CVS gobbled up two pharmacies in the area, Taconic Drug and the pharmacy in a in the local the medical strip mall. This could have been both the challenge and an opportunity for you. How did the CVS moves affect your business that you started?
Well, when Valley Woods sold out, that's what left the void because he was the pharmacy in the area. Taconic was more, didn't want to fill scripts. He was more of a gift store selling Hummel figurines and things like that. And the owner of Valley Woods was a really, he was a nice guy, a stand-up guy. So when he went out, I searched the area looking for a lease, signed a lease, and I felt it left an opportunity in the area because CVS is good, but they lack at certain things which I can capitalize on.
I remember when they both went out, and it was some bad feeling because apparently they weren't allowed to tell their employees until the week before, and they weren't supposed to ever tell the customers because the customer database could be taken over by CVS. I would suspect that left some bad feeling, and that should have helped you.
Yes, that is unfortunately. When CVS buys you out, those are the rules of the game because they're buying your client base. So if you let people know before, they're losing value in the client base they have bought. So it did leave a sour taste in a lot of people's minds, but unfortunately that is the way it goes when it comes to buying out a pharmacy.
Now, not too long after you started in Jefferson Valley, you opened another pharmacy in the next town, Putnam Valley, which is even in the next county. Tell us about that move. That was fairly soon after you opened your first store.
Well, I had, in the location where the Putnam Valley pharmacy is, there used to be a pharmacy called Crossroads Pharmacy. And I had worked there for several years under the owner, and we had an agreement for him to sell it to me, but that ended up not panning out. And about a year after I opened Jefferson Valley, I found out that he was selling it to CVS Pharmacy, which was going to leave another vacancy there. And I was familiar with the landlord. I was familiar with the town. I was familiar with all the doctors in the area. So that seemed like a good opportunity as well.
It seemed that's something that CVS has little control over. A pharmacy is open where Taconic Drugs used to be, and you mentioned you opened where the other one was. So it would seem that they could buy the last guy out, but there's nothing to prevent competition opening right where the old pharmacy was.
Usually in their contracts, they do not allow a pharmacy to go in for 6 months after the sale.
Okay. Okay, because the old fellas still have the lease? Is that how that it worked? Or?
Usually CVS will prepay the lease for 6 months, or if the owner of the pharmacy owns the building, then they will tie their hands in that they can't lease it, rent it, or sell it to anyone who wants to put in a pharmacy for a certain time frame.
Now, were you able to go right into Putnam Valley, though, or did you have to wait?
I had to wait 6 months.
Oh, okay. Now, are the two stores different locations of the same company, or are they separate standalone businesses?
They are separate standalone businesses.
Okay. Now, for a while, after you opened, you were spending time there, but you seem to be spending all your time in Jefferson Valley now. Who is staffing the other store?
I have a supervising pharmacist who takes on a managerial role and coordinates all of the staffing. And if they have any issues, then they reach out to me. I usually just cover vacation days or vacation weeks or when they need coverage, or every once in a while I'll pop in just to see what's going on.
You've chosen to close on Sundays and not compete with the other local pharmacies in the area, including CVS, that are open 7 days. What led to that decision?
I'm open 6 days as it is. Finding competent people to work poses a challenge. And with four kids, my family doesn't see me all week long, so we treat Sunday as family day, where we all hang out and do stuff together as a family. And you can't put a price on that. And most doctors are closed on Sunday, so Sunday business in a pharmacy isn't that robust. If anything, it takes a little bit away from Saturday and a little bit away from Monday, but I'm not really losing a large amount of business to be closed on Sunday.
I know that this automation has really come into this area, and I remember when you used to have to hand carry prescriptions down to the drugstore from your doctor. I don't understand why that the majority of my prescriptions come directly to you from by the email or by fax, but some, like Lyrica, have to be hand carried down. Why is that?
Well, Lyrica is a controlled substance. So in the past, controlled substances were not allowed to be e-scribed, but within the last year, New York State has now mandated that all prescriptions be e-scribed, controlled and otherwise. They don't want doctors handwriting prescriptions anymore. They want everything done over the computer.
Now, there has been some tightening of the way that people used to be able to shop around for prescriptions and do other things. And the way I understand it, it's controlled both at the doctor end and at your end. Could you describe that process?
I'm assuming we're referring to controlled substances. New York found a lot of people would doctor shop and pharmacy shop. So they would go to different doctors, get Percocet prescriptions, and go to different pharmacies and get them filled. So they've now come up with an electronic system that is statewide in New York, where pharmacies and doctors can go on and see who is getting what controlled substances filled where.
And has that tightened it to your understanding? Has that worked out?
It is definitely cutting back on the rampant abuse of opioids, no question. It's because now if you come in with a prescription, I can go on to this internet system, which is through the New York State. I can put in your name, your date of birth, and I can see what controlled substance you've filled anywhere in New York State.
Now, don't those databases both allow both you and the doctor to also to see whether there's any interaction problems between all the prescriptions that I might be on and a new one, for instance?
Not that system. My computer system, where I fill prescriptions, will go through your entire profile and check for drug interactions. And if one comes up, then I analyze it and see how relevant or not relevant that interaction is.
I was sure that my Lyrica problem, where I had to hand carry down from Grimshaw, happened in the last 6 months. Is that possible that there's still a break-in period for some of these things?
Yes. I would say yes. The switch over to mandatory e-scribing of controls was, I believe, within the last 6 months, yes.
Okay. Now, has the move to generic drugs impacted both the pharmacy and the manufacturer, or is it only the manufacturer that's losing revenue because of everything going generic?
Obviously, the manufacturers are losing money by these drugs going generic. However, most brand name manufacturers will own a generic company and will continue to manufacture it under the generic name.
Hasn't been some complaints that some manufacturers have bought up various generics, and instead of the price coming down, it's been either maintained at the old price or in that famous case that happened in the last year, that cancer drug actually jacking up the prices?
There have been, it has calmed down a little bit, but I would say about 2 years ago, it was rampant where certain drugs that were $10, $11 a bottle would go up thousands of percent overnight due to less manufacturers in the game, yes.
Okay. A while back, my internist and friend, Dr. Bob Grimshaw, knowing of my technology background, told me that I had to see your prescription robot. So I came in for a demo and it blew my mind. So please describe for the audience and tell us about the benefits both to the store and to your clients.
It's a Script Pro 200. It holds my top 186 drugs that I load into it. And when effectively stocked, it will fill approximately 50% of my prescriptions. It will count out the medicine, put it in the bottle, and put a label on the bottle as I fill the prescription. Now, this system is all barcoded and scanned, so it improves our efficiency and our accuracy. As a business owner, it's a benefit because it's an employee. It's never sick. It never needs to use the restroom. It doesn't need to go out and eat lunch. It never wants a raise. It's always there for me. So it allows me to spend more time with the clients out at the register where I'm needed.
And if the controls are proper, you can't make a mistake. So it should be more accurate too than the person that might have one less pill or one due to errors. Is that true?
I would say yes. I mean, everything is, well, as they come out of the robot, we will periodically count the pills that come out, make sure that that it is calibrated correctly. All controlled substances that come out of the robot get counted every single time so that we ensure the accuracy of the number of units of controlled substances going out.
Now, do you have the robots in both your locations or only in the Jefferson Valley one?
Only in the Jefferson Valley location. I do more volume there than in Putnam Valley.
I know that you also periodically run flu clinics. What are they and how do they work?
I offer flu shots in the store along with pneumonia shots and shingles vaccines. Within Jefferson Village, which is a 1,000 condo unit, 55 over living, have clinics every end of September into October where I will go for 2 hours at a shot and give probably over the course of those 3 weeks about 200 influenza shots to the seniors. They all line up, they sit down, we go over an entire questionnaire, I give them their shot, and then when I get back to the store, I bill everything out to their insurance.
You mentioned the shingle shots. My mother-in-law had shingles, and it was just an awful thing. But I didn't hear about the shots until the number of years ago. Is that promoted very well, particularly to older people?
I would say yes. Between the advertisements by Merck on TV and the push from the doctors, I would say yes. It's much more popular now than it was 2 years ago.
And it's the flu shots, pneumonia, and shingles. Is there anything else like that that might be coming down the pike?
As these programs take off, New York State is expanding our ability to give vaccines. We can also give the meningitis shot. We can give the tetanus and diphtheria shots. So the options are opening up as we move down the pike every year.
And just last Monday, you opened the largest store in the strip mall that you and your partner had built. What led to the expansion and also to the decision to become both the builder and a landlord?
After about 10 years in my current location, it was a decent location when I opened, but I was outgrowing it. The parking was not as adequate as I needed it to be, and I needed more space. So the opportunity came up to open, build this building and move into there. And it seemed like a no-brainer because in a normal business world, if you move a block or two away, that can affect your clientele. You're changing their pattern to your store, so you will potentially lose business. Here I was moving 200 feet to the right, so I was not really changing their pattern, so I could move my business, get a bigger spot, and not lose any of my client base.
Now, you haven't had experience in being either the builder or the landlord. Did your partner have this kind of experience, or is it a brand new thing that you have to get into?
It was a brand new thing for both of us. We knew the tenant side, so for the most part, we would know the landlord side. However, the overseeing the building of a building was a challenge, to say the least, but we survived.
Now, I know that you have a the retail, the meat store coming in. Do you have any other tenants coming in the near future?
We have three open spots. We have the potential for a liquor store to go in. And I'm really shooting for a Starbucks or a coffee shop or a bakery. I think it's a great location for one, especially with Caremount Medical right across the street. But finding people that want to go into business for themselves poses a challenge. However, once A&S Pork Store gets over next to me and it's a busy, bustling shopping center, I think that will spark even more interest.
Supposedly, by the lake, there's a sign there that DreamWorks Bakery is going in there, but I've never seen any activity about it. Now DreamWorks is over on 202. Do you know anything about their move, or why would they move to Lake Osceola?
No, I didn't. Last I heard that Osceola Manor was going to become a hotel, and over by the lake, they were going to build some apartments, some offices, and make a walkway around Lake Osceola to make it a destination for people to walk around the lake and exercise.
Well, there's a sign that's been on the fence there for 2 or 3 months saying, "Coming soon, DreamWorks Bakery." Now, I know that a coffee house went in there for a while, but they did very poor advertising. The fellow told me that he was counting on word of mouth, but since you couldn't see him from the road, I knew that didn't work out, or it wouldn't work out, and it didn't. When is this hotel supposed to be going up?
I don't know for sure. I mean, I know I've heard it for about the last year now. That they were going to go out and a hotel was going to go in. And I'm not quite sure what – I mean, there aren't many hotels around there. I don't know what draw there is to warrant people to stay in a hotel in that area.
To come to your drugstore.
Maybe. I mean, a plus for the area is definitely they're expanding the Jefferson Valley Mall. That is many, many years overdue.
Well, they have. Yes, however, I don't know if you've seen the newspapers that Macy's plans to close 100 stores. Now, if they close that store, I think they have 35 stores in New York area. If they close that store, that could be a heavy hammer to Jefferson Valley Mall. I know they rezoned the that whole lake area to something that wasn't before, to recreational and commercial or to recreational and something, and they were talking about all this the lake related stuff going in there, but that was about 4 years ago, and to my knowledge, nothing's happened since.
And I know also in town they want to put all these condos or apartments in between Hill Boulevard and Lee Boulevard in all the land behind the buildings.
Where would they go? Lee Boulevard and Hill Boulevard. Oh, do you mean on the other side of Route 6?
No, it would actually be behind where the pharmacies are and in the – almost where they would get rid of the woods, you know, back where Club Fit is.
Right.
They want to put apartments back there.
But how would you get in there? They'd have to have access roads and everything.
Well, yes. I know that on the new strip mall property, there is an easement for a right-of-way to get through there.
Oh, okay.
So they have the pieces in place. But unfortunately, in Yorktown, the wheels churn slowly. I mean, it took almost 5 years to make this strip mall come to fruition.
Now, what's the difference in space between your previous store and your the new store? How many square feet of difference?
I went from 1,240 square feet to approximately 2,700 or 2,800 square feet.
So you're more than doubled, and it's much the longer the front, certainly. Now, you do have, and been there the other day, and I had noticed this in the old store, you had a significant inventory of stuffed animals, and I'm into stuffed animals. Did they really sell? Did they sell a lot?
Upon moving to the new store, I wanted to try all new gift lines. Stuffed animals being one of them, a new line of candles, some nostalgic candies. I wanted people to have some different things to come in and see, and based on how everything will go or will not go, then I will base my future decisions on that. I just make sure that I carry lines that are not available everywhere. I want unique and different items. I don't want, for example, I used to carry Melissa and Doug, but then Melissa and Doug sold product to Target and Toys R Us, so they weren't as special anymore. So I stopped carrying them. So I want unique things there.
I know you eliminated the paperback books, from which I was probably your biggest client there. What made you give them up?
Actually, what happened was is the vendor came back in and said that he was getting out of the business. There was the titles he was getting were older titles, more stale. So he was just getting out of the business, and to find another paperback book vendor, they're hard to find nowadays.
They were stale. I had mentioned that to your staff. You had like the last Patricia Cornwall book before the new one, the Stephen King book, two before. You didn't have current stuff.
Right.
But you did have...
Go
ahead.
And that's the problem with it, is that because of all because of Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the big bookstores, they pretty much control all the shots.
Yeah, Amazon. That's interesting. The Barnes and Noble and Borders, and to an extent, Amazon killed the local bookstores, and then Amazon's did a number on Borders, and if you go into the Barnes and Noble, where I tend to hang out, they've gone very heavily into kids' stuff, to games, to puzzles, to other stuff, and less books. And since they have the coffee shop there and a bunch of us from the area spend time there, I hope that store doesn't go away. So.
Yeah, they're fewer and far between, but they're definitely expanding their product lines to not compete with them, I guess, to draw people in and make it an experience.
I know that you've also been on the softball team for years. Where do you play? What position do you play?
I've played in the same league in South Salem for, I want to say, 25 years now, and thankfully I'm still allowed to play left field.
Oh, okay. And then how often do you play?
It's usually once a week on Wednesday nights from beginning of May into August.
I had a client in, I'm not sure if it's South Salem or North Salem, Aldo Bello, the late Aldo Bello had a home there. And
yes, he lived in Waukebuck.
Okay, and is that the north or south?
Waukebuck is part of South Salem.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they have deer on the property, and they and Dido Bello could feed the deer all the time. So we had an injured deer here, and I called her about 2 weeks ago to ask her what to do about it. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to work at the Cross River Pharmacy as well, so I'm very familiar with that area as well.
Oh, okay. All right. Do any of your four children have interest in following you in the family craft?
As of now, I don't think so. They've all said they were, and as they got older, they started changing their interests. The oldest one just got her bachelor's degree in criminal justice. She's going on for her master's. The next one has the desire to get into the Naval Academy in Annapolis. And the next two still have no clue yet.
The criminal justice person, where did she go?
She went to Mercy College, and okay. Now she's going on to Iona for her master's.
The woman who takes care of our dog, if we have to be away during the daytime, was criminal justice from Mercy, and she's been NYPD for over 20 years. She's a terrific woman. She lives in Putnam Valley.
Oh.
And her husband is New York City fire person. So they have the daughter, but one of them is always home with the different shifts. So it's, she had no interest in originally in NYPD, and her advisor at Mercy told her to take the test. And she did, and that was 20-some years ago.
Wow.
I hadn't realized that Iona had a criminal justice program. They didn't when I went there.
She looked at PACE, but that's all the way down at Police Plaza.
Right.
So she decided on Iona, and she's, you know, criminal justice with, I think, a minor in forensics.
Yeah, one of the hot areas, and I used to recommend that my students in technology program at Marist College, when I was teaching there, looked at John Jay, that had a forensic computing program, that if you were a criminal justice major or a technology major, they would teach you the other one, and they did very well. They were so forensics is a hot item.
No, and absolutely.
It's much more than the CSI that you see. What's next for you?
Whew, that's a good question. I just want to get settled in the new location, and I'm not sure after that. I just want to stay one step ahead of and continue to diversify. I got to stay fresh in the business. If you fall back on your heels and get tired, then you'll start losing your edge. So I'm not sure. I know I want to possibly dabble into specialty pharmacy. That might be my next step.
So what is that? Similar to what that Mount Kisco store has, the surgical stuff? Or?
Well, there are certain drugs that are classified as specialty medications. Sometimes insurance companies deem them specialty because of their cost. Sometimes they deem them specialty meds because they need extra handling. So I have the opportunity to sign a contract with a specialty pharmacy who will help with help on my behalf to get payment for these medicines and help me to take care of the clients who need these medicines.
Now, would that be a new store or would it be part of your present store?
It would be part of my present store. Now I have a larger refrigerator. I have a full standard kitchen refrigerator, so I have room to stock all of these specialty medications, which most of them need refrigeration, whereas in my old location, I was not able to do that.
Now, what about the concentration on the surgical stuff like that? There may still be a store down by the Chinese buffet, and there's also the store that I'm familiar with, the one in Mount Kisco. That's the I believe it's Friedman or it's Robert Friedman.
Robert Jacobson's.
Oh, Robert Jacobson, yes. And
yes.
What about those kind of businesses?
Well, the one in Peekskill went out of business. Quality Right went out of business. The only one left is pretty much Robert Jacobson's. About a year to 2 years ago, Medicare went to competitive bidding, meaning that you had to try and put in your lowest bid on certain products, and if your bid was accepted, then you got the contract with Medicare to supply these goods. This was in an attempt for the government to save some money. But not many places went into the competitive bidding. The problem with Medicare is they inundate you with paperwork and things like that to make minimal dollars. So most places don't get involved in that.
Now, does Jacobson have the things like that other store used to have, the wheelchairs and all of that? I didn't notice them over there.
I don't know if he has them anymore. I know there's only one company called Lincare, which has an 800 number, and they won the bid to bill out walkers and wheelchairs and transport chairs. I know Robert Jacobson's bills out braces and things like that.
I know that when my mother-in-law moved up here from Philadelphia, that we got her her walkers and other things from the Peekskill store. I didn't realize they went out of business. So,
yeah.
We've covered a lot of ground tonight. What else would you like the audience to know about Daniel Becker?
I would say I'm driven. I love what I do. And to put in the hours I do, you have to love what you do. And I find enjoyment in taking care of the clients, getting to know them, and I'm there to help them wherever I can.
Well, thank you very much, Dan. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
A bit of commercial information. My column now appears biweekly in the Westchester Guardian, along with regular columnists, Congressperson and co-chair of the 9/11 Commission, Lee Hamilton, and critic John Simon. Westchester Guardian is available in print format and online at www.westchesterguardian.com. My books are available at Amazon, and I blog at medium.com. Send in any comments about any of this to me at johnmark13@gmail.com. And in the words of Mets radio announcer Howie Rose, after the Mets win, and we've had too few of them recently, put it in a book. go to my website for previous shows. We'll be back again next week with Julian Dibble, and I hope you'll join us then. And until then, as they used to say in the old neighborhood, see ya. Thank you very much, Dan.
All right, we'll talk.
Good night, everybody.
All right, take care.